Today's episode of the Inside EVs podcast is brought to you by E-Range EV Tyre. E-Range EV tyres are specifically engineered for electric vehicles. Using an advanced manufacturing process called liquid phase mixing, E-Range EV's EcoPoint 3 technology creates a tyre with lower rolling resistance and longer range, while offering low levels of wear and high grip. All this while staying affordable. Go to erangetyres.com. That's E-R-A-N-G-E tyres.com to find your EV's next set of tyres.
Hello and good morning all. Welcome to this Friday, November 3rd edition of the Inside EVs podcast. I apparently have self-drafted myself to be your host today. I'm Patrick George, editor-in-chief of Inside EVs, and with me are my wonderful colleagues, as always, Lacey, a.k.a. Miss Go Electric, and Hazel Southwell. We seem to be down one Brit this week. Alex Goy has mysteriously vanished on us. We think possibly because there was a time change in the UK, like we're getting this weekend in the US, and you know, he didn't realize that would affect his timing on here. And neither did any of us too. So I assume he's out just driving his Morgan and being generally awesome. And we'll probably like rush back into his room and just like be completely out of breath and then jump on with his EV take. So sorry about that. Let's see. So now what do we do? Hazel, Lacey, how are we doing this Friday morning? Afternoon, in your case, Hazel?
Good. Yeah, I've stopped coughing as much, so like hopefully this isn't going to be quite as drying as last week, and should sound less croaky. I also have a completely unasked for opinion that I sent producer Danny some photos for a propose this week, which is that the first BMW iX2s have rolled off the line just yesterday. Yes. I hate it now, and I'm really mad, which I really liked the BMW iX. It's a great car. It's really cool to drive. It looks ridiculous, and that was fun. And they've taken like a really cool girl car and made it really boring.
That is i3 vibes to me right there. Just that interior image. Oh my God. Like, whoa.
It just looks boring.
There's some wacky stuff going on with this. I don't mind the way it looks. It's such a like aggressively kind of awful design that it's like, I really admire like the guts it took to put that into production. Like that was a real just kind of like screw you to the customers, to everyone's eyes. Like
I like the light up grill.
Yeah.
I'm not against the light up grill, but I think they should have kept the beaver teeth. I'm against it being more kidney shaped. I think commit to that.
Yeah.
No beaver teeth.
I really like the Neue Klasse EVs that are coming up. I think that's a really lovely, like simplistic, refreshing design. I love the designer he talked about. It was meant to be an optimistic EV for the future and not an apocalyptic car. It's like the sooner we can move on from like whatever the iX2 or the i5 are, like, and move on to that, like the world's gonna be better off. But Hazel, we support you in your loathing of the iX2. That's not our problem because it's not coming to America. But we do have news that we should move on to. And do we want to do the news slider thing? News. Oh my God, that was so cool.
You're nailing it.
I don't know. I feel godlike with power now. So let's jump in. This has been a really interesting 2 weeks, I think, on the EV front. We have a lot to discuss today. I think starting especially with what we're seeing is kind of like the legacy automakers here in America are really struggling with every aspect of this this electric transition. You know, like Ford and GM had some really dismal Q3 results, and now we learn that the Chevrolet Equinox EV, which was, you know, kind of pegged as like their mainstream car, like their sort of, you know, almost like Volkswagen ID4, ID3, The Bolt replacement, even though it's much bigger, it's going to launch at $48,995. And the 35K trim is coming soon. This after they said it was only going to be 30 grand. So, Hazel Lacey, what do we think about Chevrolet here and this unfortunate pricing news?
I mean, I don't know. You know, my take is, like, I saw on the graphic that it was, like, starting around $34,995. So it's like, okay, so when that lower price trim comes out, is it actually going to be, like, that price? Like, to me, that's, like, indicating, like, oh, you know, guys, we still have some flexibility here, because they initially launched at Equinox and said, hey, it's going to be 30 grand. And I think that was just like a generalization. It's going to be somewhere between $30,000 and $39,999. So I don't know. I'm disappointed that it's delayed. I think that the pricing still, like, if they can get a base version at about 35, like, and then you can qualify for the tax credit, that's a good deal in my opinion. So I just hope that they can get this production ramp up and solve the issues that they're having with Ultium or whatever's going on, because I think this is going to be a pretty good product for the marketplace for us, because people still do want a small crossover type. And especially with Chevy, I see a lot of people wanting to transition into from a Bolt to something that's a little bit more like compact utility, like an Equinox. So that's my take so far.
Hazel, what do we think?
Yeah, I mean, to me, the pricing, it doesn't seem terrible given the amount of incentives that have appeared since the Equinox was like announced, really. My concern is more that GM don't seem to, and I know we've talked about this before, but if you are GM, you should know how to price a car. And they don't really seem to, like, they'll promise one thing and then something else will happen. And that shouldn't really be the case for an automaker with that much experience and that much infrastructure and that much control over what they're using. Because, you know, Ultium is their product. The other thing is, does this ever reach production at this price? Will they actually be able to ramp it up to production at that price? Because I would have thought if you offer people a price of 34,000 or just under 35,000, a lot of people are going to be trying to get that version. And I know that Ford had a similar issue with the F-150 Lightning, where people saw the really good price that was the low end of it and went, yep, I'll have that. I don't need all of the bells and whistles that will drive it up to a much, much higher price. I just want a basic electric truck. And I have the feeling that a lot of automakers are betting on people subscribing to all of their luxury options, to all of the premium options on these cars. And that is simply not where the market is. And I know we'll be discussing a lot more about this, but generally I feel like no one's looking at what's happening with ICE cars, which we can see there is a general downturn in the premium market all over, that people aren't going for lots of options, that people are looking at the best possible finance deal, like the lowest monthly payment they can be getting for a reasonable car that does what they need. And yeah, they seem to be making these very bad bets where they're like, oh, well, that price, well, hopefully no one will use it. Oh, no, they are.
I think all these automakers, and this is true of ICE and EV, I think that they all just got addicted to like the 20 years of low interest rates that this yes. we had in this country and globally. And it's like, oh yeah, it's not a big deal. You know, if you're a payment buyer buying a car that's 50, 60, 70 grand, but like people are getting squeezed out a lot more. And I think that especially in the EV market, like kind of trying to follow this pattern of just offering like big expensive trucks and SUVs, that's what worked in the gas world. I don't think it's catching on. And like, this is disappointing news from Chevy. Like my parents have owned two gas Equinoxes so far. They love the cars. They're great. It's really just like a very solid, you know, workmanlike, dependable transportation. I like driving the car they have, but like, it, you know, if it's them, it's like a 25-30K car a lot. Now we're talking about an electric Equinox that's like 52 grand. I mean, that we add in the tax incentives, it gets better, but it's like this car is really going to be worth buying when it's in the 30K range. And who knows when that will happen. And I remember before we move on to other stuff, it's like Chevy was like, what we were kind of asking, like, well, what about, you're getting rid of the Bolt, what now? Like, where's your fleet car going to come from? Where's your cheap car going to come from? Where's your affordable car going to be? And they just pointed to the Equinox. And now it's like, well, it's a lot more than we expected. So,
well, it's interesting. I saw someone on Twitter say something. Oh, like, there was Auto Week USA, I think it was, that posted an article that was like, oh, the Equinox is taking the place of the Bolt as the entry-level EV or something like that. And did you see that Mark Roos, or however you say his last name, the president of GM, like, responding? He's like, no, it's not. And it's like, well, you're stopping production of the Bolt, so it kind of is. So why are you, like, going and after also, these guys?
But also, like, I mean, yes, the Equinox is now positioned because of the cessation of the Bolt to replace the Bolt. But it can't, because the Bolt was only where the Bolt was because it had had this progressive years of finding ways to drive down the price and to make it, you know, functional. Whereas the Equinox, they have yet to work out how to get it off the production line. What I do respect is that they haven't called it like the E-Quinox or something awful for the electric version.
Oh my god, you're right.
I mean, like, the bar is on the floor, but at least there we have that.
Dear Lord. Well, yeah, let's be thankful for small favors. One of these days we're gonna have to, on like the game show segment, we're gonna have to have like who has the worst EV naming convention. I think it's either Audi that's doing like the even numbered cars are gas and the odd number cars are EVs, which I can never remember.
Soup.
Yeah, and I do this for a living. And or poor Mercedes, it's like, it's the EQS SUV. And it's like, that's the best you could do, guys.
Right.
You know. Anyway, well, we have more not amazing news to move on to, which is, I think this is all going to thread up with some stuff, or some trends we're going to talk about later. But Ford has also had some not amazing news on the EV front lately. You know, they announced, I think last week at their Q3, that they are losing as much as 36K per car in their EVs. And now, citing demand issues, but also the UAW strikes, there are things that, you know, they're going to delay battery production at one of their SK On plants in Kentucky. So it's punting more EV investments down the road for Ford, because, you know, they're looking at these things and adoption's not happening as quickly as they wanted. There's a lot of uncertainty around demand. There's a lot of investor uncertainty, because this is America and your investors don't like it when you post, you know, two or three, you know, consecutive quarters of negative growth. So Ford's kind of looking at batteries and like, I have my thoughts on this, but, you know, Lacey Hazel, like, what do we think of Ford's move here?
I am not surprised that they have found it difficult to get these Kentucky plants going. I don't believe this is a demand issue, because they've still got orders that are unfulfilled for Lightnings and stuff. Like, there's not really a demand issue. And I don't see that demand issue being something that would still be there when you have finished building and bringing online these factories. What I suspect is a much bigger issue is trying to get people to move to absolutely in the middle of nowhere, Kentucky. Because the town they're dumping these sites on has like a population of 12,000, for wages that were the same as any auto technician across, like, it was the average wage of an auto technician across the US. So probably, you know, a lot of the people who they'd be trying to get to move there would be like, well, why am I uprooting my whole life and going to like the end of nowhere? I get that there were a lot of state incentives here, but you know, the state was welcoming investment. It was a site that they'd already tried to get factories to be built on and stuff. I understand jobs creation, etc., but I am amazed if they can staff these plants, because they just weren't offering anything reasonable. And you know, as we've seen just now with the strikes in Michigan, auto workers at the moment do have a lot of power, and they can hold the OEMs to account. And it feels like they want to make these announcements of these huge factories with state investment and agreements and whatever, to reassure their boards, but there's very little thought going into how they're actually going to make them function or make them profitable for actually getting this, especially stuff like getting stuff out of the plant. Like, I can't actually remember, but I think the nearest railroad to this plant is really not close by. So I wasn't quite sure how they were planning on like moving stuff around, and all of which is logistics that can be fixed. But it does not surprise me that this really quite impractically placed plant isn't doing amazing.
Lacey, what do we think?
Yeah, I don't know. I have some mixed feelings about this, because like part of me is like, okay, yes, we saw with the UAW, I think that was a big impact on the automakers. Now that they're reaching a tentative agreement, it was a lot of money that was lost, not only when they were striking, but also just now making a deal, which is great that they made a deal, don't get me wrong. And I think that there's a place for the UAW, but also like, this is going to be a lot of money that they're investing in the whole plan moving forward. And that does impact their costs all the way through the company. So I think they have to reevaluate exactly what they're spending their money on right now to make sure that they are smartly investing. But also at the same time, what's challenging is that there are these incentives that have timeframes on them. There are deadlines. So if they want to take advantage of these, which I feel like all of the legacy automakers have to at this stage, because if you're not taking advantage of these subsidies at this stage, who's to say that once they expire, you're going to be in good shape to move with the ramp? Because I do still think that there's a ramp. And I think I agree with you, Hazel. I don't necessarily think that the demand for EVs is, I think it's because of what you're saying, Patrick. It's like, money is expensive, and EVs still haven't reached parity as far as the same price as internal combustion engine vehicles. And most of the reason is because of the investment with batteries and getting that supply chain up and running and all that. And the legacy auto just operates much different than a Tesla, who can, you know, make a vehicle with fewer parts and less complexity, but then also be in control of their margins so much so that they can drop the price and then make everyone else panic, like, oh my god, like, how are we going to survive, you know, to compete with, you know, the one that's leading the way? And they just can't move as fast, and they don't have the power because they have so many third-party suppliers that they rely on, that they can't, you know, they book these things out like years in advance with their supply chain, so they can't move like a Tesla can, where they produce most of their stuff, and they're very in control, very vertically integrated. So yeah. I'm kind of like mixed feelings, because I feel like you guys shouldn't be delaying, because you can only take advantage of these incentives for so long and then they expire. So if you want to get your feet off the ground in the EV business, it's now. Like, unfortunately, you got to figure it out. And I think they need to invest more in the engineering side of things, because they're putting out products, although there are a lot of great EV products on the road right now, they need to advance the engineering as far as like bringing electric motor technology and house battery technology more closer to, you know, the vest. And so that's my take on it. It's sad. I don't believe necessarily that EV's demand is dropping. I think it's kind of an excuse. But at the same time, I understand the struggle.
Yeah, 100%. And very fair. And we're going to talk about EV demand in a second, because that's like becoming the most interesting topic of the year. So, or like this half the year. But like, in Ford's case, like, all I'll add is like, one thing is like, I am glad they're doing is they're like, we're dialing back EVs a little bit, but we are focusing more heavily on hybrids. And like, the F-150 hybrid is like, I think that's the best selling F-150 model now. And like, great. Like, my stance on this is like, this is some EV aficionados like are anti-hybrid or call it like just like a dead end. I say it's something that like can take carbon emissions out of the air right now. And maybe in the plug-in case, get people used to living that way right now. So like, if Ford's doing more hybrids here too, great. That's net good for the planet. And that's something that General Motors can't be bothered to do. But I think that we're seeing, though, the challenges with all these companies. It's like, you know, oh, we'll just do like Tesla did. We'll just make batteries and software. How hard can it be? But also, like, Tesla had the advantage, if you want to call it that, of just like burning cash and being deep into the red for like, what, 10 years? And like, yep. and then it got the China factory set up, and then it was just printing money, and it's been for, you know, 3 consecutive years now or something like that. Yeah. Like if you're a giant, like, legacy, you know, publicly traded company, like, you know, well, not Tesla is too now, but like, you know, if you're this giant company like General Motors or Ford, you don't really have that luxury where you could just bleed money forever. Like, you have, you know, investors and bills to pay. You know, it's a shame they're having to pay for this transition with gas trucks and gas SUVs, but like, if you ask me what a better plan is, I don't know if I could tell you right now. So it's messy across the board. And this is leading to, you know, the next thing I think it's worth discussing is the EV market down right now? Is the electric vehicle market in a slump, in a decline? I wrote a rant about this week just because, like, I've seen a lot of really doom and gloom stories, especially in the financial press, just like EVs. It's not working out. It's not working out. It's just, you know, a couple bad quarters of GM and Ford. It's proof that people don't want these things. And I'm like, I think this is bullshit for quite a few reasons. There's one for the IV swear jar, but Hazel Lacey, you two want to weigh in here on is EV demand declining? I mean, globally too, not just in the US.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to hear your take, Hazel, because on the other side, I saw that VW is slowing their plant down, right? Or they had an EV plant.
Yeah. I mean, I think something we can safely say is that EV demand is not slowing down. That there is a demand for EVs, that people are extremely interested in EVs. And the EVs that people want are not on sale from automakers like GM or VW. So we've talked a lot on the show about the protectionist policies that the EU and the US have put in to protect their kind of local automakers, because you can get much cheaper EVs that are perfectly functional from China. And at some point, this is going to have to be addressed. There is overall a downturn to quite a significant degree. In June, there was across the whole premium car segment, a 5% downturn across Europe, I think, or 4.93 or something, but like, let's call it 5%. And that was like 1 month alone. And overall, there has been a downturn in not the hyper luxury cars, because the hyper rich aren't really affected by cost of living crises. But people who previously would have bought a 70,000 euro car are buying a 50,000 euro car and et cetera, et cetera. Because the monthly payments that you would be making on a loan are now competing with the cost of energy, with increasing mortgage costs, especially in the UK. You know, rent and mortgages have gone through the roof. Your energy and heating bills have gone through the roof across Europe. I know there is some effect of that in the US. And although in general, there's things like record levels of employment in the US and a booming economy, it's not actually translating into people having more money, because everything costs more, like food costs more. There's increasing functional prices. And so for anyone who's somewhere between the like billionaire and like normal person segment, you are going to think, you know what, maybe I don't need a BMW. An MG is fine and stuff. So like there is across this specific segment that has been massively overdeveloped in EVs, which is premium cars. So cars well over $50,000 or euros, you know, and heading into the over 100,000 as part of the initial pricing. That market has slowed down because people can't afford to buy these things. And it's particularly because most of those cars would be taken out on 3-year loans. And nobody wants to take out a loan program where they have a monthly payment that they have any risk of not making. Because if you fail your car credit, then you're screwed for a long time. I think if you're saying has the demand for EVs slowed, no, not at all. It's just that the sales of these premium cars that are pretty much the only thing that anyone is offering, that is slowing.
I agree completely. Yeah. It's the money problem, I think. And we still haven't built that supply chain, like I said, that to get the prices down enough. And people, I think, are becoming more nervous about the charging infrastructure. And it's not to say that it's not rightfully so, but I do think it's kind of blown out of proportion a little bit. And I only say that because I drive all the time. I'm like on my way down to Florida right now. So I drove from Nashville area down. I'm in Georgia right now, and I'm making my way down. And all the trips that I've had from Michigan down to Nashville, down to, you know, where I'm at now, have been flawless experiences. So you can have a good experience road tripping in an EV. And mind you, how often do you road trip? Most people, they aren't like me or some other people that are constantly on the road driving all over the country with their EV. But every time I talk to somebody new, they're intrigued by going electric, but they keep saying the myths. They keep saying the things like, well, but you can't drive across the country. I'm like, no, I've been doing it since like 2015 or 2016. So you can.
And that's a really good point. Like, actually, we kind of have to hold our fellow automotive journalists a little bit responsible, because, you know, you get, even in the UK, where it, like, you can drive across this entire country in a day if you really, really want to. Like from the furthest southern tip to the furthest northern tip. And you have people writing, a guy who I quite respect wrote an article where he said trying to do that in an EV was simply physically uncomfortable because he sat in a car for a long time. And I'm like, that's nothing to do with the EV though, is it? And I think, yeah, there's been, I mean, it's a rare fortnight where you don't get an article where people are like, oh, but the batteries though, or like some completely made up thing about some factor to do with EVs. And so, yes, they are being posited as a risky purchase, but they're probably actually not, because they require a lot less maintenance than an ICE vehicle. The resale ability, as far as we can tell, seems to actually be very strong. Like, my mum just sold her 2011 Zoe. Like, oh no, it can't be 2011. It's the oldest form of Zoe, for like nearly $5,000, which isn't very much, but given what the state that it's in, and like the it comes without the battery lease and stuff like that, like, that's still a reasonably good price for something that is actually really quite a clapped out car at this stage. So, and where they weren't that bothered about the price, they just wanted someone to take it away, basically. So, yeah, I think
reliability is, like, people should be held accountable for the networks, like, definitely make sure that they're providing a reliable network. It should be seamless where you can just plug in and know that you're going to get a charge and not worry about if it's an operational charger. So don't get me wrong on that front, but I think that it is kind of overblown. That's just my take.
I do too. And I you all made extremely good points. I agree with everything here. If this is, if they're not making, these automakers don't have the supply chain yet and aren't making the cars people want and can afford. And I think if these things were cheaper, we'd buy them. My biggest issue is I take real umbrage with the, like, up two bad quarters, this is a failure. Like, it's a great headline. It's at some of these outlets, I'm not going to name my friends that work at them, but it's like, it's great clickbait in some ways. But like, this is a long-term transition for this industry. This industry has always, it has always chased efficiency, even when it's been dragging and screaming to do it by regulators. But this is the ultimate end game for efficiency. And it's gonna be hard. It's gonna take a while to get there. But to call it a mistake or it's not working out for Ford and General Motors after two bad quarters is unhinged. And
agreed.
Guess who it is working out for? Is like Hyundai Motor Group came out, like they had a profitable, fantastic Q3, and then their EV sales were down like 0.1%. Like, it's like a rounding error. And they're just like, whatever, bring it on. Like, 8 battery factories all over the world. You know who it's also working for is BYD. All right. Because like the minute like they start building factories in Mexico, which we know they're going to do to get around the tariffs, and they can enter this market with really high tech, really well built, I guess in theory anyway, we'll find out. You know, EVs for $25,000-$30,000, like that's gonna be a real headache for GM and Ford if they can't figure this out. And I think that these automakers need to realize, like, there's a real future where like they just make gasoline trucks for farmers and for construction equipment. Like, they just say, you know, the EV thing was too hard, we're just gonna cede it to the Koreans, the Chinese, maybe the companies that can figure it out. But it's like, just because this isn't working for Ford and GM doesn't mean it's not the future. You know, like, someone else will figure this out if we can't. And that's the end of my rant there. You know, sorry. Get very heated about this one.
Completely agree. I love it. Unhinged. Speaking of unhinged.
My God, it's Alex Goy.
Hi, everyone. I need to send out a little bit of an apology because I was busy taking notes for the show. And then I checked our kind of private chat thing where Hazel said, am I being really dim? But because of the time change, it's now an hour earlier for us. And I read that about 25 minutes after she sent it and after the show started. So sorry, everyone. Do carry on.
No, I'm gonna I just imagined you just zooming into your apartment on the Morgan, maybe like jumping through the window, tucking and rolling, then throwing your helmet off and being like, hello, you know.
Hello, I'm back. I'm back. Scott, what year is this?
Oh my God.
Diving through the window. Oh, the visual there.
Amazing. I'm going to turn this over to you, Alex, because your voice is much cooler than mine and you're much more confident than I am. And, you know,
also, we have a great what year is this segment coming up?
Yes. Yeah. I've been listening in ever since I realized I forgot how clocks worked. I agree with all of your sentiments entirely. However, I think I've come for the perfect bit. Because Elon Musk gone mad again. He's done a stupid, hasn't he?
Let's put aside global economics talk for a second and talk about what's really important here, which is the Cybertruck aeroproof? Yes or no?
The thing about this story that has absolutely grabbed me, as the youth say, I am shooketh, is Joe Rogan said, sorry, Patrick, wrong moment to catch you drinking. Is that they were talking as they do about some sort of nonsense that they know nothing about. And then Rogan says in the story on Inside EVs, can I try with an arrow? I bet I can get it in there. Anyway, they make a $1 bet. But the bit of the story that absolutely got me was, and Rogan sent for his 90-pound compound bow. Who just has one of those on hand? Who?
I think this is good because we're slowly going back in time with ballistics that have been used to fire at the Cybertruck. Like, you know, last week we were talking about Al Capone. Now we're talking about Harold Hardrada. Eventually someone is just going to straight up throw a rocket. And I think that's
well, cool. They tried throwing a rocket at it and it broke the window.
Oh, yeah.
A metal ball.
Well, it's basically a rock.
Yes.
So Steve B in the comments, what weapon can we shoot? Can we fire at EVs segment? Yeah, next week, Bolt versus Bazooka. What else should we try and fling at various EVs?
I don't understand. I'm taking crazy pills here. I swear to God. Like, I don't understand why we're doing this. Like, Inside EVs, 2 weeks ago, we had this story about, like, the Tommy gun being used against the Cybertruck. Like, cool. So that when me and my like bootlegger friends in the Chicago mob in 1941, this is going to come in really in handy for us. Like, what are we doing? Why does this matter? Why?
This is kind of reminiscent of that guy who was the main character on Twitter a few years ago who said, well, we need guns because how am I going to take down 60 to 100 wild hogs on my ground? Like, what? Like, I get that it's a nice sort of look at what our truck can do, but goodness sake, nearly swore. Ben Hillard, Alex, no way there isn't a bow off screen in your office. Also, he should have shot the window or the wheel. There isn't a bow, but there is a wooden Lego man painted to look like me. But yeah, he should have shot the window or the wheel because those.
Yeah, like tactically, Joe Rogan is poor, which doesn't surprise me. But
yeah. I mean, has the guy ever blown up a car with weapons before? I mean, come on, you know.
I mean, we all
like day one stuff, man.
Amateur.
For goodness sake, it's just this the thing that gets me is like it's cool what they've done to the Cybertruck. Yes, it can withstand 1930s weaponry, that's great. But it's this sort of confidence of like, well, I've got loads of money, loads of time, and I mess around. So, you know, I bet I can shoot it with an arrow and break your $9,000 million car.
Yeah, did you see, like, I know I think someone was saying in the comments, oh yeah, Ben said about they should have shut the window. Then he started talking about how it you could option for bulletproof glass, but then you can't roll the window down.
Okay.
So yeah, who's gonna option for that? What the hell?
I think the people who
are based right now, it's incredible. I feel like that's like, yeah, I it's just such a stunning statement to hear. It's just, you know,
that's memeable.
Yeah.
I mean, the people that would option that, it's like that guy on Twitter a while ago who was like, well, I know I can drive wherever I want and I'll be safe. It's like, who are you scared of? Why is where you live so sketch that you need to spend $100,000 on a truck and you're worried?
It's for Mars, Alex.
It's the gated community of electric vehicles, that thing.
And like, why would, like, you know, I live in London's glorious Peckham. And like, if I was offered a loaner car, I think rightly OEMs might question where I was going to park it of the streets available to me. But I would not think, you know what will make my car like less stealable or less likely to get damaged? If it's clearly over 100,000.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, I'm the other week, I was driving around in a car worth seven figures and street parked it nearby an event that I was at. And I did not feel great about that.
Seven figures. What was it?
Yes. Bentley Batur. Which was aggressively purple, but it's not powered by electricity, so we shan't talk about it. But there is a first drive coming to Motor One very soon.
Your life is so much cooler than mine, Alex. all I'll say here is like it's easy and in some cases necessary to clown on Musk and Tesla. I just want to say for the record, like this team is like is pro Tesla generally speaking, and whether they've done amazing things, have done more than any other automaker to take carbon out of the air. And I think you don't underestimate them. Like, I have real doubts about the Cybertruck, but I've been proven wrong many times before. And like this, they could get the point where this is very, very, very successful for them. But lately I've been thinking, you know, there was kind of a fight inside Tesla after Model Y. It's like, what do we do next? Right. And there were people in the company who were sort of really pushing Elon to go and build the really affordable EV they've been talking about for years, a $25,000 EV. And not only did he want to do the truck, he wanted to do the Cybertruck with stainless steel. I'm kind of wondering lately if they had put eggs in that first basket instead, really focused on the affordable EV. Mm. For all the reasons we just talked about, like EV demand might be up and down, and these companies are wondering, can they really build these affordably and profitably? That's the company that could have done it, like at least in America. It's like if they had done that instead of this goofball monstrosity, Joe Rogan, munitions car. But that's something that just would I don't think GM or Ford executives, maybe even Hyundai executives, would ever get a good night's sleep ever.
According to Musk on that podcast, it'll do 0-60 in under 3 seconds in the beast mode version, and it weighs between 6,000 and 7,000 pounds. Isn't that such a practical everyday vehicle that everyone wants? And it can withstand Joe Rogan's arm's width compound bow.
I think people do want that is the thing. Like people do, like to some extent, I guess moving the like honking toxic masculinity problems of the kind of like smoke pumping truck as identity ownership to the Cybertruck, at least there is a reduction in emissions there. These people will probably not cease to exist, and it's a way of getting them on board with something that we know we have to do. You know, there's increasingly desperate scientific papers being written pleading that the likelihood of stopping at 1.5 centigrade is slipping through our fingers. So if we can convince a few people who, yes, okay, I'm never going to hang out with them and I don't want to get in their cars, to switch to something less toxic, marginally, at least in emissions terms, if not, you know, social terms, then do I think it overall this kind of behavior is good? No, but adoption of EVs is good. So
I think I agree with you, Patrick. I wish they would have gone with the like more affordable one, but I'm wondering if, you know, because that's got to be pretty high volume, if they would be able to keep up with the battery demand to produce those as far as manufacturing goes. I wouldn't put it past Tesla, but I know that, you know, at least when they were first starting to ramp 4680, it was kind of like, and it's not of the promise of what we were expecting. We'll see what happens with Cybertruck, but I think that the battery supply chain could potentially, you know, be a restriction for them. But I mean, also Shanghai was very unexpected to get the volume up there with all the vehicles coming out of there. So I don't know. I wouldn't put it past them.
Yeah, if anyone can pull that off someday, it's going to be Tesla, I think. And I don't know, I kind of hope it would be versus like BYD coming in and just eviscerating our market. But, you know, that's capitalism. Not everybody gets to win. That's kind of the point.
I have found an example from 2018 of an arrow piercing a car in the Bay Area.
Do tell.
I can't get any more details because it's behind a paywall. But it did happen.
Was it an EV though?
It wasn't an EV, to the best of my knowledge, No one was hurt. But someone did shoot an arrow at a car. So this is a real scenario that you have to be prepared for.
I remember a few years ago. So I grew up in Cambridge, and there's lots of little villages outlying it. And there's a town village thing called Saffron Walden. It made the local paper that there had been drive-by shootings where someone had been shooting cars with a BB gun. So maybe Cybertruck's perfect for the sleepy town of Saffron Walden with its town square and BB people.
I will say, as the Texan on this podcast, and Lacey being from Michigan, you may agree with me. When Alex brought up the guy, I was like, I need all those weapons to take down feral hogs. Again, where I'm from, I'm like, oh yeah, that's actually a very perfectly reasonable use case, you know.
Exactly.
I've heard of stupider stuff. Yeah, you got to take down the feral hogs before they get you. You know,
of course.
I mean, they're everywhere. They're like ants.
Yeah, some of them are actually mayors of several cities in Texas now. But anyway, speaking of Tesla, we should move on to stuff we've been driving and other people have been driving in this first case, which is kind of for any loyal listeners out there. First of all, thank you. But also, we're kind of playing with the format of this show a bit, and we're no longer separating Tesla news from news. We're obviously going to keep covering Tesla because it's a super important company in this world, but it's all going to get mixed in, which begs the question, what else do we do? And I think we should try and experiment with stuff we've been driving or have seen people driving lately. And Alex, you want to kick us off with what we have some American impressions of the Model 3 Highland update from our old pal Kyle Connor here.
Yeah, I mean, Carl, I met him the other week. It's a thing. He's a very, very lovely chap and knows all the things. So he's driven the Highland and he seems to like it, unsurprisingly.
It does seem like a really nice upgrade. Like, I've heard really positive things from everything I've read about this thing so far.
I mean, yeah, it's reading through the story, having had a quick squidge at the video earlier while I was thinking it was an hour ahead. It's quiet. It's smoother. It's a smoother ride. It's got new toys. The interior's a lot nicer. I mean, by the sounds of what Kyle said, like it's the right upgrade at the right time for the car. And I don't know about you, but I really like the look of it. I do. I don't know if I said it before, but because Tesla's design language is a bit samey, and it works for me.
It's grown on me. It's a nice upgrade, I think, visually.
Yeah, man. His videos, well, there are plenty of videos out there. Well worth a watch, well worth experiencing. The one kind of Tesla, the thing that's been going around is this side impact, the blind spot thing, which has been, people are wowed about because, oh, it's on a Tesla now, and isn't it the best thing in the world? And Volvos have had it since 2012. But you know, that's all good. But no, it's a 50-minute video. It is pretty, what are my words? I'm losing my words because of the time.
Comprehensive.
Difference. That's the one. Thank you, fellow Brit. It's a comprehensive review. Kyle knows his stuff. I'm kind of excited to have a go myself, frankly. Before we, as we're, the time is sort of slipping from us. Patrick, you've been having a go in a car that very much suits my use case. It's a new manual EV, because I've driven resto mods that have been EV converted,
yeah,
that have got gearboxes in them that work like a normal gearbox because they are a normal gearbox. But you have been driving a new Lexus, or tell me all about it. My brain is broken. My brain is
Wrinkled. Your brain's fine. It's as beautiful as always. I'll tell you about this, and then I want some Rivian updates from Lacey too, which is what I now live for. But no, I was in Japan last week for the auto show. I'm sorry I missed the podcast. I was probably trying to get back, but got stuck in a Don Quixote superstore instead, as one does. But as part of the auto show, Toyota brought us out to their Shimoyama Technical Center, which is brand new. It's kind of in the middle of nowhere in Japan, outside of Nagoya. And there we tested a prototype mule. It was a Lexus UX 300E, which is a Europe-only electric version of the UX crossover.
Having had a go, it is aggressively okay.
Yeah, it seemed like it would be, but this car had a manual transmission, which they filed patents on like 5 or 6 years ago. They've started making in prototype form last year, and they are going to make this. They've confirmed it for production. And the way this works is, obviously, you don't have an actual transmission because this is an EV. What you have is a stick shift that's connected to just a sensor and a clutch with a sensor. And those things work with the car's software to sort of modulate how torque is delivered from the electric motor. And this simulates the feeling of a manual gearbox. Meanwhile, they created fake noise for this car, fake engine noise. It was like kind of a V6 sounding noise they made for this. So it, like, you press a button, the manual turns on, and you are simulating the feeling of being an ICE car with a stick shift while you're in it. And this sounds goofy, and I was deeply skeptical, and it's totally a gimmick, but it was fun as hell. I had a great time in this thing. I love the fact that you could just turn it off whenever you want. And then the car went back to just, you know, one speed, no noise, just normal EV. So you're in your commute, you're in EV mode. You stumble on a great back road near you, and you want to have some manual style fun, you put on the engine noise of your choosing, by the way. And I think Toyota wants you to be able to download all these engine noise in the future. Put on the stick shift and go have a go, like you're in an LFA or an MR2 or something like that. And I don't know, I enjoyed the hell out of it, and I'm impressed how they pulled this off.
What I really want is someone to make a downloadable engine noise that's just someone going meow, 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 meow. I have a genuine question. If you fluff a downshift, so you know when you're driving along and you don't rev much, you don't put enough on, does the car kind of lurch and drag you back? Do you get that torque drag?
You can't grind the gears, obviously, which is good, but it does have the lurching back and forth of that comes with a stick shift, you know, where it's inherently a less smooth movement. I was really surprised at how they nailed that. You can also stall it out too. You can stall an EV, and I tried it before I went out on track. I'm like, I'm just gonna see what this does, and I, you know, put in first and lifted off the clutch, and it shut down. And then you know, like most modern manuals, you push the clutch in and it restarts. And like,
amazing.
There was this engineer who devised this whole thing, young guy, and he's like a GR Yaris driver. And we're out there, and he was a Japanese dude. He says to me, I don't really like BEV, you know, battery EV. I don't really like BEV. He goes, but with this, I love BEV. So this is like what happens when you like tell like a GR Yaris guy who's like not mega interested in this technology, like, make this fun and awesome. And this is what he comes back with. And like, I think it's crazy and it's delightful. And I don't know who's going to buy it, but I'd be into
it. Did they give any hints to applications? Because, you know, you've got GR86s, you've got GR Yaris's, GR Corollas, you've got all this. Like, Toyota's really good at making fun, fast stuff.
Yeah. I mean, like the chief designer of that FTSE concept, the orange one, it looked like an MR2, looked like a mid-engine sports car. He kind of like hinted to me that it was going to be on that car. Or that they'd have a version with paddle shifters, because it works the same way, right? It's just software. Yeah. You could do either. He kind of intimated that'd be the case. The rest of the company clammed up when I tried to confirm this, but like, that's a pretty good contender here. And they want to make electric sports cars. They want to make smaller cars, lower cars, lighter cars. Like, they're not just going to be you know, like this all SUV lineup. And I think, you know, a day is going to come, right? And we're almost there now. We're like, nobody knows what a manual transmission feels like. It's basically extinct in America. Europeans are doing a little better than we are. But like, for now, this is a great way to like preserve a degree of fun from gas cars that hasn't really translated to EVs yet. And I don't know. I just like the guts it took to like reverse engineer an anachronistic technology for an electric vehicle. It was like, this took some doing, and I'm into it. Lacey,
I think my favorite part of that article was "this should not exist" or something along those lines that you said, Patrick, because that's how I feel about it. It's like, it's so silly. And like, we can't even sell manual transmission cars here. I love the save the manual people. Like, they're so cute. They're very cute, but let's get real, people. Nobody wants to buy them. Like, everyone wants a simplistic machine. But I will say, I do appreciate the fact that you can turn it off. So I'm okay with that, because you can turn it off and you can just, if you want to have that sensation, okay. I just don't think people, like, it's, I don't know, MSC value.
I think
complexity when you're the enemy, in my opinion. I don't think that you should add the complexity, but some people want it.
I like the idea of being able to turn it off, because, like, I don't know, we've all been sat like on a hill or something going like, oh, I don't want to have to keep my foot on the clutch, for God's sake.
Traffic.
And I think, obviously, it's a gimmick. I would actually be interested to see less kind of ICE recreation gearing in EVs, and kind of more having like really silly fun with it. Like, because it is all basically programming and stuff, you could give a Nissan Leaf some paddle shifters and turn it into a real boy racer car, you know, or girl racer. I think there's some fun that could be had. Like, obviously, as we have spent the majority of the show talking about, OEMs are having enough problems creating EVs in the first place, and probably don't need to add any of this. I do wonder if there's like some futuristic gearing and fun that could be done with EVs that we haven't looked at yet.
There was a piece that I think about regularly, written by my almost namesake car and haircut double, Alex Roy, years and years and years ago, about how in the future you would be able to buy a new 911 that would be electric, and then you press a button and it would give you the gearing and the sounds of a 2.7 RS, or it would give you a 997 GT3, and it would kind of simulate that. This is where tech like that, I hope, is going, because as Lacey said, you know, for most people, and Patrick said, you know, manuals in America aren't a thing. Rest of world, we still kind of like them where we can. I mean, they are dying, but they're still a thing. But can you imagine if someone like Porsche had that tech and went, all right, now it's going to feel like this, now it's going to feel like that, and all of a sudden your EV that a lot of the enthusiast community go, oh, it's just a hairdryer, it's a vacuum cleaner, which is tedious, don't get me wrong, but all of a sudden they can have their EVs drive to work in, it'll do 200-300 miles in a charge, whatever, and then on the way home they can have a 2.7 RS, they can have a GT3.
It's funny you bring that up, because one of the other cars we drove there, it was another EV. This one had paddles. It was rigged with paddle shifters, and they put us through different programs on it. Like, one car, it was like a Toyota Passo, which I think is like a small economy hatch that y'all have in Europe. And it was slow. It was buzzy. It was like, oh. And then it was like, we press another button, and then it turns into a Toyota Tundra. It had a ton of torque. It had that deep V6 sound. Then it was an LFA. And they didn't quite nail that sound yet, but it's like they are working on like programs for these cars where it simulates the sound, it simulates the power delivery, the feeling, the gearing. And I said to one of these Toyota engineers, in theory, if this is all software, you could kind of program an EV to perform the way you want, right? Like, you could set it up almost like a Gran Turismo tuning car, like however you like it. And he was just like, and I was like, and you charge people subscription revenue for this. And he's like, so. I will say, like, the last thing on this before we move on to Rivian experiences is a few people in the comments have been like, you know, Toyota, I would settle for like some EVs from you and not just like ones that have a manual transmission someday. I'm like, that's not wrong, you know. Like, let's crawl before we can fly here, right, folks?
Indeed.
Lacey, how's your road trip going? Tell us all about it.
It's great.
Wait, where are you now?
I'm in Georgia right now. I'm on my way to Florida, though. So I started last week, and we talked about it on the podcast. My first stretch of the trip was from my home in Michigan down to Nashville, because I'm working on a couple of projects here. And then now I'm going down to Florida for a personal family get-together for the weekend. And so last night I started my trek after work and had to stop at just one charging station because that was pretty much full when I left. So I was at, actually it routed me to a Rivian charging station, which was the first time that I used it for my Rivian that I just got a few weeks ago. For those of you who don't know, I just got a Rivian R1T Max Pack Performance Dual Motor. And so this is my first road trip in it. And I think I'm at like 1500 miles so far on my odometer, but I'm still making my way down to Florida. The charging experience has been wonderful for me so far. I have had zero issues. Initiation has been seamless on Electrify America and on the Rivian network that I charged at last night. So those Amazing. Are the types of networks that I've been charging on. The Rivian one, I thought it was kind of interesting because it really can take advantage of the full capacity of the charging curve. I would say is like it jumped up. I think I plugged in at like 15% state of charge last night, and it jumped up to like about 200 kilowatts, and mine can take up to 220. Probably see that at the lower ends, like 0 to 15%. So it jumped up to about 200 and it stayed there for a while, and the curve just slowly tapered down, jumping down until I got to about like 60%. Then it was at about 110 kilowatts, which I thought was a little lower than I was expecting. It was a little cold outside, but not anything that I would expect. It was like probably around the 50s, maybe high 40s. Where I don't think that it should have been as low as it was, but I only needed to get to about 60% and then I was on my way. I am plugged in right now at a hotel because that's how I do. I love to just utilize hotel charging to make it just like how I would charge at home because I save time and it's more convenient. But I'll probably have one more charging stop for today, but I've been very happy. My efficiency has been kind of hovering around 2.1 for the first leg of the trip, and I like 2.2 at this stage, but I'll be posting on X another thread of the data because I feel like a lot of people really appreciated seeing all that information. And again, I was sitting in my car last night while I was charging at the Rivian station, and I think I had like 1.5 kilowatt hours from the charging experience go to my cabin heating. So yes, cabin heating is still very inefficient in this car, but comes with the territory. One of the reasons I got a Max Pack was to just combat all the degradation, the winter weather, the road trips that I go on, and all that.
And you like the car? The car itself still fun? You vibing with it? Everything?
I actually was really surprised because initially I ordered the quad motor setup. I wanted everything. I tried to order it as much as I could, and I put the order in back in 2019, and they pulled some of those things away. So obviously cost savings for them. But the performance dual motor, I was very surprised. It feels, I've driven the quad motor before, and the performance is like, yes, there's a difference, but it's probably not detectable too much to anyone that's driving it. So I was really happy. I've had actually with this work project that I'm on, some of the colleagues that I have, they wanted to drive. I'm like, yes, drive it. Like, I'm just like, drive it, please drive it. I want to see what you think. And they're like, just like, they start swearing when they put the pedal down because they're just like, it's tire screeching and it's just going all out in sport mode and it's super fast. So they're claiming 0 to 60 in 3.5, but I don't know. It kind of seems like it could be even a little faster than that, but it's just really impressive.
For reference, I think this is a very petrol based reference, but a Porsche 911 Turbo S, the 991, the last generation, they said it would do 0 to 62 in 3.3. So that's as fast as a Porsche 911 Turbo.
Yep.
Which is mad.
So yes. How is it with, like, I don't even know how this is possible sometimes with the laws of physics. We were talking about the Cybertruck earlier. It might do, 0 to 60, the low threes, and weigh 7,000 pounds. Like, this is like we're bending time around these vehicles or something. And it's just, I don't know. We could say what you want, whether that's excess or not, but, like, it is incredible from a performance perspective that we could do this now, you know?
Yeah.
That's
I'm loving
instant talk, baby.
Yeah. It's just like, yeah. I mean, recently, like, I was for the Revel rally, I was driving that Bronco, and I was like, you know, it's, I love the Bronco, like, the way it looks, and it's just, I wish it was electric so bad, because when I put the pedal down, I'm like, holy moly, I'm waiting 5 years for it to do something. So it's just like, it's crazy the difference in the performance that you get right off the line. I will say, like, the driver assistance features, I feel like Rivian has a long way to go to provide, you know, experience that I would expect at the price point that they're selling the vehicles, you know. And I've said this before, I think it probably needs to compete more with who closer to like a BMW Mercedes. But one of my biggest annoyances with the system is that, you know, if you're making a long road trip with the highway driving assist stuff, it keeps you in the lanes. But if you ever want to do a lane change, you have to like forcibly disengage it every time. So if you put the turn signal on, it doesn't like disable that lane or that side of the lane that you're trying to change. So you're fighting it every time, and then you have to re-engage it by pressing down the stalk twice. So it's like you're doing this like hundreds of times because you're passing people. So it's like disengage, annoying, put it back on, and you have to be directly center in the lane for it to be able to turn on the system. And also, I was having something weird happen, and I'm interested to know like how their system works as far as like what they're utilizing to have this perform, because in some big overpasses, it kept giving me this error that was like, there's a tunnel ahead and you have to take control. But then the system would still stay on. But then it would tell me, like, you have to push up on the stalk to disengage it because you can't be in this mode right now. It doesn't just, like, disengage it itself.
Well, I guess if it disengaged the thing that you were relying on to keep going in a straight line and not fall off the edge of the world, if it just went, surprise, that would kind of be negligent.
But I mean, like, it's like I wasn't going through a tunnel. I went over like an overpass. So, yeah, I don't know. That was kind of interesting. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts, throw them in the comments, because it did it like 3 or 4 times over these big overpasses, which, I mean, I flew through them quick.
Is it maybe apps, kind of maps, sorry, not apps, maps. Is it maps going, you could be
wondering.
Going on this road over or under, because there's a bit leaving London. There's a bit of the, when the A4 becomes the M4 and there's a road underneath the motorway, and Google occasionally, because I Google Google Maps for everything, basically, it occasionally goes, you need to take the next entrance to the M4, because if you're not there, you're going to end up in Kent or something. And because it can't tell up and down.
Yeah.
Is it that, maybe?
I don't know. That's why I was wondering, like, what systems are being, like, what is it doing? Is it using GPS location to provide that information? Or is it simply seeing it with the camera or the shadow? Like, I don't know. It's interesting.
Well, if it was shadow, I guess every time you were driving at night, it would just lose its mind.
Right. Yeah, and I haven't gotten any like phantom braking. I would say like if I have gotten like a bit of like another car coming into like a semi coming over into the lane a little bit, it'll just like lightly pulsate and then release. Like it's pretty good about that, I will say, because that was one of my biggest gripes with my Model Y is I had phantom braking all the time when I used autopilot, which is why I didn't really like using it. And I didn't have any FSD or anything like that. I just had simple autopilot. I didn't have enhanced autopilot. And that bothered me all the time because mine was a vision-based only system. But this car seems to be really good about that. I haven't had any like real concerns about phantom braking. So, yeah.
Phantom braking. Scariest terms there is. Like, I want nothing to do with that ever.
I believe that it was first devised by Andrew Lloyd Braking. For his hit musical. it took you a while, Patrick. I saw your face.
It wouldn't be the IAVs podcast without a solid dad joke somewhere in there.
Yeah.
I may be late, but I'm still on fire. So before we go, I've also been doing a driving this week, and I want to sneak this one in.
Yes, please.
In case I'm very late next week. So we're overrunning a little bit. Sorry, friends. a couple of weeks ago, you might remember, Hazel and I went to see the David Brown Automotive Mini E-Mastered, where we got E-plastered, and I laid down next to it to measure it in metric goys, 1.5 metric goys. I've driven it. That's how I spent my Tuesday afternoon. In the very same car, I tried to spoon after several glasses of champagne. Unsurprisingly, it's very small. it's super, super tiny, because like it's for all intents and purposes, it's an original Mini. They've got, you know, it's wearing an N registration, which means it's, you know, ancient pre turn of the century. They put a new body shell on it. They de-seam it. They put new rear lights on it. They put their logos on it. The interior is beautifully put together. Like, it's got the most sumptuous leather known to man. The carpets are gorgeous. The fit and the finish. The paint is perfect. Everything's shiny. It's a real Mini It's the real Mini of your dreams, or that your dad would have dreamt about when he was driving around in them in the 70s and 80s. But this one has an 18.8 kilowatt hour battery. It's got a 72 kilowatt hour motor, but it weighs the same as an original Mini. So an original Mini is 640 kilos. I can't quite do the maths on that, but some pounds. So it weighs basically nothing.
What does this have in the way of safety equipment, if I may?
Knees.
Knees. Okay.
Yeah, it has. Really, sure.
Because it's not a new car, it doesn't need to meet modern crash rates.
Oh, I just wasn't sure if they retrofit.
I think it has been reinforced in a few places, and so it's not quite the kind of like fully
knees-ish
traditional Mini. Yeah.
Gotcha. I wasn't sure if they retrofitted it with airbags or not, but it sounds like safety is like don't crash, you know.
Yes, safety is don't crash. But it's, you know what, as a car, you know, it's got CarPlay, it's got air conditioning, it's got electric windows, it's got all the mod cons you would want. But then you turn it on, and it just sits silently because it's a you know, drive neutral reverse job. And you just go buzzing out into the city. You know, I had a few hours with it, and I was driving around central London, where the cars are all massive now because everyone wants an SUV. Everyone wants, you know, to feel big and above the road. But it means you can just dart in and out of spaces. You can, you know, you can go through little gaps that no one else can. The new enormous LEVC black cabs. Thank you, Hazel, in the comments. £1,410. Thank you. I can't do that math that quickly. But you can dart in that space. The steering, you know, they do have power assistance on the David Brown Automotive Minis, because they are aware that their target audience, considering the ICE cars, are £92,000, so about $100,000+ before tax. This is £120,000+ UK, so about $150,000 US. They're aware that the people who are going to buy them might not necessarily be over-encumbered in the upper body strength area. But it's still darty, it's still fun, it's still communicative. And because it weighs nothing, you put your foot down, it just goes. You just fly, and then you feel like an X-Wing in the Death Star trench between all these SUVs, going in and out of things and trying to avoid getting squashed by errant tourists or stupid people in buses. But the coolest thing about it is, because you never see Minis in London anymore, because it's not the 60s, you see the BMW Minis, and they're lovely, but they're normally run by estate agents, which means you know the people inside them are morally corrupt. But you don't see any original ones. So I drove it over Westminster
Bridge.
An
estate agent is a realtor.
A realtor, sorry.
Yeah.
A realtor. There's a chain called Foxton's that has them. They're green with yellow roofs, and they're driven by people in ill-fitting suits and with loose morals. Good thing I'm not selling a house anytime soon. Because no one sees them, I drove it over Westminster Bridge and around Westminster because it's a nice little route. But there are still tourists everywhere. And all of a sudden, Big Ben was no longer the star attraction of London. It was the shiny man in the white Mini with the gold roof. And people were stopping, they were waving, they were giving me thumbs up, they were asking what it was, you know, because why isn't it making any noise? And it's just a cool thing. One final point before I stop wittering. I've driven the electrogenic Mini drop-in kit, which is kind of similarly powered. It's but you can get the electrogenic kit is £15,000 and you give it to a mechanic and they will take the engine out of your Mini and they will just put it in and your Mini is now electric. So if you've owned a Mini, if you pick one up in the 90s when they're worth about 4p, then great, you can do that and then you have a Lecky Mini if that's what you want to do. The system in this, the whole package feels a lot better resolved. I think because Electrogenic doesn't do full restorations, they're very clear. Their job is to make cars that aren't electric electric. They will refuse to work on a car if it's going to kill you in a crash, but they don't do any resto work. Whereas David Brown sells a fully restored, absolutely perfect to your specification Mini, which means there aren't creaks and rattles. It's the tech works, so the heater works, it's got the little CarPlay screen. There's a little bit more sound deadening in there if memory serves, because it was a little quieter than I would expect. The noise from the motor doesn't intrude into the cabin. It's not a very whiny, noisy car, which you can get with some of the conversions. It kind of squeals at you, whereas here, of course there's an EV whir, but it's not quite as intrusive. But long story short, it's really good, but it's really expensive.
What is it? What will it put you at again?
Pardon?
What does it cost again?
What does it cost? So £120,000-ish. So the US reports are about £150,000-£155,000.
So if you really like Mini Coopers, I mean really, and you have a lot of money, this is the car for you.
I mean, I would say that
if you would spend over like 10 grand on some kind of accessory, like a handbag or something, this is the Mini Cooper for you.
Yeah, it's exactly that. And the use case for it, realistically, it's not LA. It's not an LA car. It's not any kind of really big spread out city like Dallas. It would be useless in, because there's loads of freeway and just rinse the battery. Whereas London, New York, Chicago, Cambridge.
LA is a parking lot anyways on the 405. So you could make it work.
True. And it's also a largely awful place. But
I would be really scared to drive a car that small in LA. I feel like a truck would just go over the top of it without even knowing.
Just go a cyber truck.
Yes, yeah, so someone that's
shooting
truck
bows going, out there.
Did you feel that? Oh, someone's trying to blow us up. It's okay. It's a super safe car. Joe Rogan's out with his compound bow again. Servant, fetch me my bow.
That's what I want to see, side by side of the Mini and the Cybertruck next to each other.
Can you imagine? Yeah, it's very much you have a townhouse, you have a driveway, your Mini is parked in the garage. Like there's Muse houses dotted around London, which is basically tiny little houses that are stacked up. There's no garden. You get a garage and some floors upon which to live. So you have your Mini in there, or your classic 911 in there. You plug your Mini outside, and it's what you use to get around. Interestingly, the first customer for the E-Mastered was Simon Cowell. Off of...
Interesting.
Not looking like what he used to.
American Idol and things.
Yeah. Music and stuff.
High trousers and stuff.
Very high trousers and currently very high
baby gap shirt.
Very elastic forehead. If you look at a recent picture of Simon Cowell, I mean, he might have had
been resto modded.
Exactly.
Yes, he has. But yes, Mini, good, very odd, very expensive. You can't have one because we can't have one because we're all poor. But I quite like one because it's fun. And I think on that, he says, wrestling, having appeared halfway through, I think on that, we're a little bit over. Apologies, audience, but hopefully you enjoyed it. That is us done for this week. So I've been Alex Goy, turning up late. A huge thank you. And late and unhinged, looking a little bit like a shiny Doc Emmett Brown from Back to the Future. we've also been joined by the lovely Patrick George. Hi and bye, Patrick. And Hazel Southwell.
Hi.
And Lacey. Hi, Hazel. And the wonderful Lacey Miss Go Electric. We will see you, and I might see you if I get my timings right. Time to do some Google adjusting. Next week. Until then, have a lovely week and a relaxing weekend. Bye, friends.
So long, guys.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. See you next time.